This is KCSN and KCSN HD1 Northridge KSBR and KSBR HD1 Mission Viejo. This is the SoCal Sound, member-supported public radio for music lovers. Join us on the SoCal Sound app and the SoCalSound.org.
A very happy Wednesday evening to you all, and welcome to The Soundtrack. I'm your occasionally non-misanthropic host, Lev L. Spiro, and tonight we are joined by an amazingly accomplished music supervisor, a man whose resume is so long it requires one of those medieval scrolls that, you know, drops down on the palace floor and rolls across the carpet. His name is Kevin Adelman, and here are about 15 of the 170 credits listed on his IMDb page. Homeland, The Killing, My Name is Earl, Young Sheldon, Matlock, Elementary, Charmed, Jane the Virgin, The Mindy Project, Criminal Minds, Bones, Franklin and Bash, Boston Public. You know what? I'm just going to end the list with the terminal list because this could go on forever. Kevin, welcome to The Soundtrack.
Thanks, Lev. Great to be here.
It's lovely to have you here. Now, before we go into the minutiae of what you do, let's get the broad overview. I want you to tell the listeners, what does a music supervisor do for TV and film? Do you, like, stand over the musicians as they play and whack them with a drumstick if they miss a note?
Well, not quite. There's what I like to think of as three arms of music supervision.
Okay.
Obviously, there's the creative aspect of it, which seems like the most glamorous part. You get to listen to a lot of music. You get to find the perfect song for the scene. And that's a certain skill set and something that you really hone over years and years of doing it and making sure that you can find the right music for the scene. But there's a lot more to the job.
So the first arm is finding great music.
Yeah, I think that that's the part that people see.
Okay.
That's the part that people hear out on films and television when they see a sound, or they hear a soundtrack and they hear a song that they love, or it's really like evoking some emotion in a scene. But there's so much more behind the scenes that goes into it.
Okay, give me another arm.
Well, one of the arms is the administrative arm. You know, there's a lot of business that is behind the placement of every song that goes on a show. We have to negotiate licenses. We have to have relationships with publishers, labels, managers.
You're not talking about sexual relationships.
No, it's not quite, not usually.
Okay. Just checking.
It's these are the, you know, this is the part of the job that is not as glamorous, but it's very much an important aspect to be able to get the deal done. Because if I were to send you a great song for a scene and it works perfectly, but we can't negotiate a license or it's way out of our budget. So there are all the administrative aspects of the job, budgeting, clearance, the legal side of things,
right,
making sure that we can get a song.
Not the fun part.
And the fun part.
What would the third arm be?
Third arm is the technical side. So just understanding how a song can be edited, the editing side of things, the technical side of production of music, pre-records, playbacks, on-set use of music, kind of being able to put the whole thing together. I mean, it's a pretty broad skill set, music supervision. Not everything gets seen by the viewer, but having all of these, the knowledge, to the technical knowledge.
You know? It is broad. Yeah. Speaking of broad, I have to say, when I started looking up your credits a few weeks back and delving into some of the filmic worlds, which you've helped create, which are very many, what really hit me was the sheer diversity and range of genres and styles that you bring to the table. Mm-hmm. Everything from the outlaw country and hard rock of the Terminal List, 70s AOR for Young Sheldon, classic jazz for Homeland, even to like rock and Espanol and Jane the Virgin, and even within shows like Criminal Minds, which you've been on for a long time, where you've put on everything from Billie Holiday to the Pixies. So is that fun for you, getting to explore all these different musical realms?
Oh, yeah. I love music. That's one of the reasons I got into this business. I just love music. I love a wide variety of music, genres, styles. It excites me. And the getting to delve into a visual application of the music is, you know, again, that's the part of the job that's really fun and that's really exciting. But learning about all these, this like breadth of music is another fun part of the job. I mean, that's if you love music and you get to work on a project where you get to dive deep and learn more jazz and learn more, you know, music from the 20s or learn country music. I think it speaks to someone that is well suited to the job if they have that desire, that love of music, where you just want to learn and you want to kind of absorb whatever the project needs, because every project needs something different. And you can be an expert on one area and only work on, you know, shows with country music. But I think to be a well-rounded music supervisor, you kind of have to absorb music from all areas so that you can work on a variety of projects.
I can hear your excitement and your joy in music, even as you're talking about it. We have that in common. I love the combination of music and moving pictures and what they do for each other and how they expand each other. Well, I want to start us off musically with a track from one of the eight shows that you and I both worked on in the past. It was My Name is Earl. So how do you approach a show in the first season? Do you try to discern the tone from the pilot script? Do you go into a meeting with ideas to pitch? Are you trying to pull ideas out of the showrunner's head, or all of the above?
Yes, all of the above. And I think that's going to be a theme if you're going to, you know, as you ask questions about music supervision. I think it's different on every project, and it's all of the above, depending on each project kind of has its own set of parameters and its processes. So yes, I get involved early. I'll read scripts. I'll come up with concepts for music that I'll play for the showrunner or for the director. Sometimes it's a collaborative effort. Sometimes they already have ideas and I'm just trying to guide them. So I'm involved at all levels of the pre-production and production process and post-production, obviously. Yeah.
Well, here's a classic track from the show, My Name is Earl. This is Mr. Warren Zevon.
Trader Vic's. His hair was perfect.
Werewolves of London by Warren Zevon. We're visiting with music supervisor Kevin Edelman. I mispronounced his name earlier. Edelman is Edelman. Edelman. Kevin, tell me a little bit about the show Young Sheldon. Like you, very eclectic in its music choices, ranging from Glenn Miller to The Clash. When do you start contributing music to an episode? Do you go to the concept meeting beforehand with the director and crew? Are you reading scripts at home? Or does your work start more in post-production?
Yes, all of the above again.
All of the above this again. Keep answering to these multiple choices.
Well, that's the most appropriate answer.
Yeah,
yeah, okay. All of the above again, depending on the project. We get involved at all stages. There are times when we get involved late in the process. If there's something that, you know, a project needs help with, we need to revamp something, can you come in and help us find a bunch of songs? But typically, I would get involved much earlier, you know, as early as concept, writer's draft, you know, when things are just being kind of fleshed out.
Do the writers ever call you up and
they
say,
do.
Yeah, we're looking for something.
Yeah. All the time. Yeah, I'll get a call from a writer like, hey, we've got this Beatles song that we really think would work great in here. And I'll say, okay, well, this is what that's going to involve. We should all go into this knowing.
Beatles song, right.
Yeah.
It's 13 episodes, but if you're willing to only do 6 episodes, we can use that
or
money
we
for
can,
the Beatles song.
Exactly. Yeah. We can just eat up our budget in this one track. But it's, sometimes that's the process. Sometimes I'll get a call early. Hey, we're thinking about doing this. What do you think? And we'll work things out that way. And then sometimes it's a little later in the process. Typically, I am reading every script. I'm going through it. I'm highlighting any spots where music might play or things that are, you know, clearly musical moments that we need to address ahead of time. Because, like I said, from the technical arm of the job, anything that needs to be addressed for camera, we need to get ahead of and either work out a pre-record or, you know, if there's something that someone's going to sing live or if there's someone playing a guitar.
And then sometimes, of course, you have music, traditional music spotting sessions when the picture is locked. And this is when the director, producer, showrunner, composer will sit and we'll talk about which cues are appropriate for a composer, for score, and which need needle drops, that sort of thing. So you also get involved at that stage.
Yes. So the spotting session is where it all kind of comes together. And we talk it out. They used to all be in person. After COVID, for some reason, everyone wants to just Zoom, but I embrace in-person spotting
sessions. You were shocked when I said, no, you're coming into the studio
like,
tonight.
Really?
And,
people do that?
Yeah.
I love being in person because I think everyone connects a little better when we're all in a room and we can talk about a song and we can talk about a score. And it also allows me to kind of interact a little more closely with the composer and the music editor, being in a room together.
One more question before we play this next track. Do you ever call the showrunners up and say, what are you thinking? Your music choices are terrible. Your taste is crap. Here's what we're going to do instead.
Call them and say it or think it. No. Everyone has, that's what's amazing about music. It's so subjective. Everyone's got their own taste. Everyone's got what they feel will move them musically in a show.
Sure.
So my job, I think, is to help guide them to the best version of their vision possible.
Without being insulting to the point where you don't get
I don't think it's productive and I don't think it's right.
No, it's not.
But I also don't think that, you know, any idea is bad, because if that's their vision, if you're the director and you have a vision for something, that's your vision.
And that's the difference between us, and that's why you're still working and I'm not very much these days, because I think there's some really bad ideas.
Well, there are bad ideas. There are ideas that just are not going to connect as well as they could. But my job, I think, is to kind of take those ideas and just steer them.
So gosh darn good at it, my friend. Well, somewhere in Young Sheldon, you worked in one of my favorite tracks from guitar great Stevie Ray Vaughan. This is Pride and Joy.
Where you've heard about
back to the soundtrack. I'm your host, TV and film director Lev L. Spiro, and we are here with music supervisor Kevin Edelman. Kevin, you came of age, musical age, in the 80s, is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
So when I hear people start their music in the 80s, I of course think of what we now call New Wave, Talking Heads, Depeche Mode, Pretenders, The Police, The Cars. That was not your music, was it?
No, it was not. I was more entrenched in kind of the hard rock,
wow,
metal, and rap.
So early rap. I have to ask you, why hard rock? Why hair metal? And I have to tell our audience, by the way, that Kevin is a very handsome, very bald man without a single strand of hair on his shiny smooth head.
Wasn't always like that.
Oh, I see. Okay. I was going to say, but headbanging music.
I did have hair at one point to throw around. And it was really, you know, you're a product in great part when you're young. You're a product of your environment.
Right.
And that was kind of what I was around. I was, you know, my friend group, we all were listening to rock and hard rock and metal and rap, and I had one of those cool Alpine sound systems in my car that I could bump the rap going down the street. But that was just, you know, a product of where I grew up and what
was in Florida.
Okay. Yeah, I was born in Jersey but moved to Florida, and so like middle school, high school was Florida, and that's where kind of got that base of the rock you know, genre that kind of excited me at the time. But I also hadn't been exposed to a lot of other music, which came kind of a few years later.
Yeah, well, but were you, when you were doing the hard rock, did you know about Led Zeppelin, Deep Purple, Black Sabbath?
Sure, classic rock,
okay,
hard rock, metal. I mean, at the time we were listening to like the mainstream stuff, like the Judas Priest and the, you know, stuff like that. That was just fun for youth because it was something that would piss off the parents. Like, you know, it was just, you
that's
know,
really what it comes down to.
That's what it comes down to. But I was definitely listening to other music. I really started embracing it more as I got a little, you know, into my late teens and 20s.
Well, I picked this one for you as a throwback to your youth. Mookie tells me this may be the first time this band has ever been played on this radio station. But this is one of my favorite songs from this band. I hope you like it, Kevin. Here we go.
Too much, you're the only one.
That, of course, was the song Photograph by the band Def Leppard that came out in 1983, just in time to form neural pathways in young Kevin Edelman's brain. Mookie, you told me you'd never played Def Leppard before on the station.
No, this is a first. Yeah. You know, sounded great on the radio.
Can we go on with the show, or do I need to leave now?
Let me double check. No, we could continue.
We can continue. Thank you. Yeah. Okay, thank you, sir. Thank you, Kevin. When did you start expanding your musical universe to include other genres? Was that post college?
No, I'd say it was during college. That's okay. When you kind of get exposed to a lot of different things. At the time, I was playing in bands. I was a drummer. So the music I was playing was more kind of rock and mainstream rock and hard, you know, classic rock. But I was definitely listening to more music in college, getting exposed to more kind of alternative music, other forms of like rap and hip hop that I was listening to. It was really, and even jazz and other genres like that, classical, all of that kind of expanded for me more in college than it did, you know, younger.
And then after college, you move out to Los Angeles. Tell us a little bit about how you broke into being a music supervisor, please. Did they even exist?
They didn't really. I mean, there were a handful of people doing it professionally. Right. It was more of an in-house job at the studios. There would be like a head of music at the studios. But in terms of an independent music supervisor, kind of forming your own business and growing and working on a bunch of projects, it really didn't exist so much. There were a handful of people, like I said. I happened to get hooked up with a team who were very established and doing some great things. They're still good friends of mine, Evian Clean and Paul Brusek. Evian runs a company called Neophonic. Paul Brusek is the president of music for Warner Pictures. And they were my mentors. They kind of took me under their wing, just taught me so much in those early days of my music supervision career. And I really took to it. I realized pretty early that it was kind of a good combination of things that I liked and things that I thought I could be good at in terms of the business aspects of the job, the creative aspects of the job, kind of the interpersonal interaction aspect of the job. And I just kind of took the ball and ran with it.
So you did not sleep your way to the top?
Nobody, none of my guests have.
I so tried. Far. It's like, I'm very disappointed. This is not the Hollywood myth I'm trying to perpetuate and move forward. All these people are like working really hard and struggling and doing all kinds of jobs and acquiring knowledge. It's not as sexy a myth. Well, one of the many shows that you've added music to was the show Bones, which also gave us a very eclectic mix of musical genres, including this fun track. And as a drummer, you must love this one. This is the Latin Soul Syndicate. We'll be right back. We're listening to the Latin Soul Syndicate with the track Mambo Mambo. Kevin, how do you go about finding new music? Do you get sent a lot of tracks from publishers?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We're sent tracks from everyone. We're sent tracks from publishers, from labels, from managers, from artists, independent artists, promotion companies, sync companies. There are companies that are fully focused on sync placements that represent, you know, they kind of aggregate artists and send them to music supervisors. So we're getting music from a lot of sources. It's kind of one of the challenges of the job now.
Yeah,
is managing where the music's coming. Like, what do you do with all this music?
Well, I don't imagine you have the luxury of being able to just sit and listen to whole albums. Are you skimming and taking notes, or perhaps looking for something specific?
Mostly. Yes, mostly skimming, taking notes, and looking for. I'll find myself when I'm looking for something specific, finding something specific for something else. Like finding something else. Like you kind of the busier you are, the more efficient you are. In my opinion.
Do you still get earworms even though you're having to go through?
100%. I'll go down the Spotify rabbit hole for sure.
To me, that's
it's so fun.
The good stuff.
I love
the
it
stuff when that you, sticks.
When you're looking for a specific style or genre and you find something and then you say, oh well, what else is like that? And you start finding these artists you've never heard of, and then you what other artists are like that? So we do have like these tools now with Spotify and these other tools where you can really kind of dig deeper than you could have before, because you would have had to go find the records and like do research, and now you can kind of just let one piggyback on the other and find new music.
Well, this must have been a lot more challenging earlier in your career before you were established. You're not getting sent as much music, so you'd had to find it on your own. Is that right?
Or? Yeah, that's correct. I mean, a lot of it would have been just early on. It would have just been on music that you already knew. And you know, once you're in the job and people know you're in the job, when I started, they would send us CDs and I would just get mailings and have to go through the mailings and listen to the CDs and see if there's anything that fits. I might make some phone calls to the labels, to the publishers. Hey, I'm looking for this. They would send CDs over. That's just the way it was, you know, early on. But now, of course, with everything being digital, it all moves much quicker at much greater volume.
Wow. Well, here's a more recent cue from a band that I very much like. You got this one into the show, The Mindy Project, a few years back. This is the band Lord Huron with I Will Be Back One Day. You're listening to The Soundtrack. We'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. I'm Brett Denham.
Hello, this is Zach from Cayucas.
We're Minna and Kelly from Daisy the Great.
This is Courtney Marie Andrews.
This is Taylor Goldsmith from Dawes.
This is Hannah Jadagu.
Hi, this is Alex from Sports Team.
This is Marcus King, and you're listening to the SoCal Sound.
Hey, this is Hannah Joy from Middle Kids. Support public radio in Southern California by making a donation at thesocalsound.org.
Support for the SoCal Sound comes from Live Nation, presenting War, Tower of Power, and Pancho Sanchez for an evening of music hosted by Cypress Hills DJ Muggs at YouTube Theater on December 20th. Tickets are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. War, Tower of Power, and Pancho Sanchez. YouTube Theater, December 20th.
Support comes from 818 Brewing, the Valley's brewery, a local family-owned brewery, tasting room, and pizzeria in Canoga Park, celebrating their 10-year anniversary this year. 818 Brewing on DeSoto, Valley Made. Brewed to last. More at 818brewing.com.
Support for the SoCal Sound comes from South Coast Botanic Gardens' Dogtoberfest, now raising a paw as it's happening every Saturday and Sunday in October, featuring live oompa music, steinholding and pretzel toss competitions, tail wagging entertainment, Bavarian-inspired food menu, and of course, beer. Dogs and their best friends can go on the expanded bark walk, complete with splash pads and obstacles for dogs. VIP packages available featuring beer samples, a Dogtoberfest koozie, puppuccinos, and more. Tickets available at southcoastbotanicgarden.org.
Donating your car, truck, RV, or boat supports your favorite programming on the SoCal Sound. Credit your vehicle donation to The Morning Show with Nick and Jet, Middays with Julie Slater, Afternoon Drive Time with Matt Pinfield, or any of the many great weekend shows like The Dylan Hours with Lisa Finney or The Open Road with Gary Calamar. Your gift is tax deductible. It's a win-win that just takes a couple of minutes to get started. We take care of the paperwork and the pickup is always free. Go to the SoCalSound.org/support or call 877-527-6123.
The following is a test of the emergency alert system. This is only a test.
One epic night. Four incredible acts, all to support your favorite independent station, the SoCal Sound. Join us for BeneFest 2025 with headliners Everclear, plus Dan Wilson of Semisonic, Ruby Friedman Orchestra, and White Denim. Live at the Alex Theater in Glendale, Friday, November 7th. Tickets are on sale now at thesocalsound.org or Ticketmaster.com. Support music. Support community. Support the SoCal Sound at BeneFest 2025. Thanks to our partners at Subaru of Glendale.
And we're back. You're listening to The Soundtrack. I'm Lev L. Spiro, and our guest tonight is music supervisor Kevin Edelman. Did I hear you just promise Mookie a part in Terminal List Dark Wolf as a Navy SEAL?
Well, I'm not the casting director, but I can throw a word in.
You can't get me in for like a cameo or anything, like Mookie, anything.
Will you be drawing on your extensive past experience as a Navy SEAL?
I've never been a Navy SEAL.
Oh.
I like the color navy blue.
Okay.
I've been to Fisherman's Wharf, and
you've
I think there's
seals,
there,
okay.
Right? So that's it really for me. Yeah.
Well, that's something. You like navy blue and you've seen seals. Okay. Well, anyway, you would have to buff up a bit for that,
I know.
That part.
Okay. I know.
Back to the serious business of music for TV and film. Speaking of the Terminal List, Kevin, I'd asked you to suggest some of your favorite cues that you've added to recent projects, and you drew my attention to this cool remix of the Bob Dylan song Masters of War. Can you tell us about this?
I had put this song aside because I thought it was really cool for the show somewhere. It kind of hits all the right marks in terms of lyric and tone. And originally, I had suggested it for a scene in an episode where someone was... we'll just say being tortured. We're not gonna.
Okay.
Elaborate on that. But it ended up that scene ended up being much shorter, and they ended up scoring it. But the song then the producers felt like the song could work somewhere. So we tried it in some other spots, and there was a scene in the episode where it ended up landing that was originally scripted as a Kanye song playing in a car. as this guy is, this bad guy is driving, and our hero is going up on a perch to kind of scope him and snipe him. We ended up putting it in that scene. I mean, the Kanye song, we went after Kanye for a while, and it was just like, I mean, this was kind of before Kanye. This was before the deep
before end. All the rampant anti-Semitism
exactly.
came out.
Exactly. Yeah. This was pre all the the wild stuff that yeah. really happened. There was, you know, some wild stuff, but not that. Listen, it ended up being a big win for everybody, because this song and this in this scene was like one of those perfect kind of combinations of visuals and music, and it ended up working great in the scene. So we ended
Very
up using
cool.
it in this other episode.
Well, let's check this out. It's Masters of War, originally by Bob Dylan, and this is called the Shergun Remix.
Come, you masters of war. You that build the big guns. You that build the death planes. You that build all the bombs. You that hide behind walls. You that hide behind disks. I just don't want you to know I can see through your mask. Done nothing but build to destroy. You play with my world like it's your little toy. You put a gun in my hand and you hide from my eyes and you turn and run farther when the fast bullets fly. You've thrown the worst fear I can ever be hurled. Fear to bring children into the world. A voice threatening my baby, unborn and unnamed. You ain't worth the blood. You're dead.
Masters of War, the Shergun remix by Bob Dylan, Drew Sherrod, and a gentleman named Strange Daddy. Kevin, it just so happens you have worked closely with two composers who are friends we have in common, Tyler Bates and Sean Callery, who have both been on the soundtrack in the past. Mm-hmm. Talk to us about how you collaborate with composers. Do you only talk with them through the intermediary of the director or showrunner? Do you work with them directly? How does that work?
No, we work directly, and those are two of my favorite people in that profession. I mean, Tyler and Sean are two of the best. It's always a pleasure working with both of them. But I tend to, like, we work together. Ideally, we're trying to kind of create a unified sound for the show. So the songs and the score have to kind of interplay quite a bit. And sometimes, you know, if we have like a big song moment and the score has to be in the same key and we have to kind of work the handoff so it all works sure. together. So I tend to early on establish a relationship, if I don't already have one, with the composer, so that we can really make the soundtrack as good as it can be.
That totally makes sense to me. Right now we're listening to a classic jazz track that Kevin used for the critically acclaimed show Homeland, which featured a heavily jazz inflected soundtrack and had composer Sean Callery. So you're talking about working with Sean.
Yeah.
And you're working with him now on a pilot?
Well, yeah, we were just working on a pilot. Sean and I have worked together quite a bit over the years. We actually did many seasons of Bones together. We did many seasons of Elementary together.
Oh.
And, of course, Homeland the entire run.
It really is a small town sometimes. Yeah. Well, right now we're listening to Miles Davis with All Blues, also featuring, it's pretty amazing, John Coltrane, Cannonball Adderley, and Bill Evans on piano. Kevin, we were talking about listening to new music, and you told me something really interesting about your association between music and art. Can you share that with our listeners?
Yeah. For me, music has a visual element to it, and that's probably why I enjoy so much putting music to picture.
Sure.
When I started in the business and we were really using CDs and CDs were being sent to us, I would always associate the artwork on the CD. Mm-hmm. Even before that, you know, in my youth when we would have albums and LPs. And,
sure.
You know, the artwork kind of spoke to what I was going to hear, or at least once I heard it, I made that association. And for a long time when we were working in CDs and I had to find music based on a CD, I would have a wall of spines to look at, basically.
But now the last decade, you're looking at words on a computer
screen.
Now
it's become more challenging, but a lot of the submissions that come to us do have art attached.
Cool.
In the platforms that they're sending us music, so I can start to reassociate. When it was all in iTunes and it was all just, you know, a bunch of words, it was more difficult to seek out the music, but making that connection between the visual and the sound for me is very helpful.
So the art is coming back.
Yeah, I think so.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, here's a track from a lead singer who studied art and design at Ealing Art College. And Kevin, you used it in the show Young Sheldon. In my mind, this track is also indelibly linked, I have to say, with one of my favorite comedy horror films, Shaun of the Dead. This is Queen.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself a real good time. Feel alive, and the world I'm turning inside out. Yeah. I'm floating around in ecstasy, so don't stop me now. Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time. I'm a shooting star leaping through the sky. Tiger.
collision course. I am a satellite. I'm out of control. I'm a sex machine ready to reload. Like an atom bomb about to explode. I'm burning through the sky. 200 degrees, that's why they call me Mr. Fahrenheit. I'm traveling at the speed of light. I wanna make a supersonic woman.
Folks, you're listening to The Soundtrack with our guest music supervisor, Kevin Edelman. Kevin, you told me that one of your all-time favorite shows to work on has been the long-running series Criminal Minds. Can you tell us about that, and why is that your favorite?
It's just a great group of people. I mean, it's when you work on a show for that long, we're now doing season 19.
Wow.
It's a family. You know, you have a, you've kind of, everyone knows, everyone has respect for each other. Mm-hmm. and what they bring to the table. There's a lot of creative freedom. And also, you know, it comes down to the people. It's just, yeah, when you work that long with people and they're good people, it's just a really enjoyable experience. They are very collaborative in the music selection process and the creative process. And they, it's been a lot of fun.
I always loved getting invited back onto shows because then I don't have to prove myself, yeah, the next time. It's like the first time you're on the show as a director is really tough.
Any first season show, yeah, everyone's on their toes and everyone's trying to figure out how it works.
Yeah.
What are the expectations? What are, you know, how does the puzzle all fit together? But when you know, after you get a few seasons in, a show that runs as long as Criminal Minds is a unicorn for that matter, but it's you really kind of understand how it all fits together and what your role is and how you can contribute in the best way possible.
Well, here is one of the fruits of your long-standing collaboration on Criminal Minds. This is a band called Radiohead.
Come up calling,
This is what you'll get when you mess with us.
Disappointingly, we are almost out of time for tonight. I told you it goes by really fast,
it
right?
Does, yeah.
Do you have any parting thoughts for our guests? You know, like, hey, kids, if you like music, go ahead. Listen to it.
Oh, absolutely. Listen to lots of music. I'm encouraged with my own kids.
Yeah.
I was just telling you during the break that, you know, some of the stuff they listen to is not my cup of tea. But they're exposing themselves to more Radiohead and artists like this that I think just expose yourself to a lot of music. It took me until after high school to really start opening my pathways to other
to
styles
move on from Judas Priest.
And just really, you know, explore. Go down the rabbit hole. Get on Spotify. Go down the rabbit hole and see where it takes you, because there's so much great stuff out there.
Buy a ticket, take the ride, as Hunter S. Thompson said.
Yeah.
That's a great advice. Go down the rabbit hole.